Chapter 28. There were three of us in the cheerless yard: Isaac Cranford, Jeff Malick, and myself. The only one who looked at ease was Malick, and it was fitting that it should be so, since he was, in a manner of speaking, the host. He owned the knacker yard, and he looked on benignly as we peered into the carcass of the cow he had just opened. In Darrowby, the name Malick had a ring of doom. It was the graveyard of livestock, of farmers' ambitions, of veterinary surgeons' hopes. If ever an animal was very ill, somebody was bound to say, "I reckon she'll be off to Malick's before long," or, "Jeff Malick'll have her in finish." And the premises fitted perfectly into the picture. A group of drab red brick buildings standing a few fields back from the road, with a stumpy chimney from which rolled endlessly a dolorous black smoke. It didn't pay to approach Malick's too closely unless you had a strong stomach, so the place was avoided by the townspeople. But if you ventured up the lane and peeped through the sliding metal doors, you could look in on a nightmare world. Dead animals lay everywhere. Most of them were dismembered and great chunks of meat hung on hooks. But here and there you could see a bloated sheep or a greenish swollen pig, which not even Jeff could bring himself to open. Skulls and dry bones were piled to the roof in places, and brown mounds of meat stood in the corners. The smell was bad at any time, but when Jeff was boiling up the carcasses, it was indescribable. The Malick family bungalow stood in the middle of the buildings, and strangers could be pardoned if they expected a collection of wizened gnomes to dwell there. But Jeff was a pink-faced, cherubic man in his 40s, his wife plump, smiling, and comely. Their family ranged from a positively beautiful girl of 19 down to a robust 5-year-old boy. There were 8 young Malicks, and they had spent their lifetimes playing among tuberculous lungs and a vast spectrum of bacteria from salmonella to anthrax. They were the healthiest children in the district. It was said in the pubs that Jeff was one of the richest men in the town, but the locals, as they supped their beer, had to admit that he earned his money. At any hour of the day or night, he would rattle out into the country in his ramshackle lorry, winch on a carcass, bring it back to the yard, and cut it up. A dog food dealer came twice a week from Broughton with a van and bought the fresh meat. The rest of the stuff Jeff shoveled into his boiler to make the meat meal, which was in great demand for mixing in pig and poultry rations. The bones went for making fertilizer, the hides to the tanner. And the nameless odds and ends were collected by a wild-eyed individual known only as the Ketfelly. Sometimes, for a bit of variety, Jeff would make long slabs of strange-smelling soap, which found a brisk sale for scrubbing shop floors. Yes, people said. There was no doubt Jeff did all right. But by gory, earned it. My contacts with Malick were fairly frequent. A knacker's yard had a useful function for a vet. It served as a crude post-mortem room, a place where he could check on his diagnosis in fatal cases, and on occasions where he had been completely baffled, the mysteries would be revealed under Jeff's knife. Often, of course, farmers would send in an animal which I had been treating and ask Jeff to tell them what had been wrong with it, and this was where a certain amount of friction arose, because Jeff was placed in a position of power and seldom resisted the temptation to wield it. Although he could neither read nor write, he was a man of great professional pride. He didn't like to be called a knacker man, but preferred fellmonger. He considered in his heart that after 20-odd years of cutting up diseased animals, he knew more than any vet alive, and it made things rather awkward that the farming community unhesitatingly agreed with him. It never failed to spoil my day if a farmer called in at the surgery and told me that once more Jeff Malick had confounded my diagnosis. "Hey, remember that cow you were treating for magnesium deficiency? She never did no good, and I sent her into Malick's. Well, you know what was really the matter with her? Worm in tail," Jeff said. "If you'd nobbut cut her tail off, that cow would have gotten up and walked away." It was no good arguing or saying that there was no such thing as worm in the tail. Jeff knew that was all about it. If only Jeff had taken his priceless opportunities to acquire a common-sense knowledge, it wouldn't have been so bad. But instead, he had built up a weird pathology of his own, and backed it up by black magic remedies gleaned from his contacts with the more primitive members of the farming community. His four stock diseases were stagnation at lungs, black rot, gastric ulcers, and gallstones. It was a quartet which made the vets tremble for miles around. Another cross which the vets had to bear was his unique gift of being able to take one look at a dead animal on a farm and pronounce immediately on the cause of death. The farmers, awestruck by his powers, were always asking me why I couldn't do it. But I was unable to dislike the man. He would have had to be more than human to resist the chance to be important, and there was no malice in his actions. Still, it made things uncomfortable at times, and I liked to be on the spot myself whenever possible, especially when Isaac Cranford was involved.